June is Dairy Month in Wisconsin, known for generations as America's Dairyland. The economic impact of the dairy industry is about $43 billion with a B per year, and 96% of Wisconsin dairy farms are family-owned. But the July 1 Class 1 milk price is $15 per hundredweight. That's down 36% from more than $24 in 2014, and Wisconsin has lost 500 dairy farms in 2017. So there's some tough times in America's Dairyland. Wisconsin, I asked experts and farmers to discuss these important issues, and I'll let each of them introduce themselves. To my left, Dr. Mark, go first, please.
I'm Mark Stevenson. I am the Director of Dairy Policy Analysis at the University of Wisconsin.
And you're also chair of?
I'm also chair of the New Dairy Industry Task Force 2.0.
Yes, thank you. Andrea, please.
I'm Andrea Brossard, and I farm with my family in Beaver Dam, Wisconsin, Brossard Dairy Farm.
So. Thank you. Dr. Tara.
Dr. Tara Montgomery. I'm from the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, and I am an associate professor in animal and dairy science.
Thank you. Dave.
And I'm Dave Daniels. I'm a third-generation dairy farmer from Kenosha County, and we have dairy cows on 575 dairy cows.
And are both of your families family farms?
Yes, we are.
How many generations, Andrea?
My brother and I are the third generation.
Third generation, and Dave?
Third generation also.
Okay, Mark, you have the honor of chairing the task force, which has not yet met, my understanding?
That's correct. We're just in the process of nominating candidates.
Now, give us an overview of the task force and the 10,000-foot view of why it's needed.
Well, we patterned the concept or idea after a task force that was conducted here in Wisconsin in the mid-1980s. At that time, they were facing quite a few changes, quite a few problems and issues in the dairy industry. Issues are different, and times are changing differently now, but it was felt that there are enough big things that are occurring in the industry that it was time to stop, back up, and think just a little bit about who are we, what do we do well, what should we be doing, how do we position ourselves for the future in this industry.
He just said there's some big things facing the industry. Your definition of big things, Dave, you want to go first, then Tara, then Andrea? Big things.
Yeah, the big things, in the last couple of years, we've had some farmers that had lost their processors. That's been a new thing that's happened in Wisconsin, and there is a number, about 50 of them in 2017, and here about 20 more in 2018. So that's something we aren't aware of that has happened in the past in Wisconsin. Our cheesemakers, which are very loyal to the dairy farmers, always wanted more milk, and we tried to supply that with increasing our production. But we ran into a little stumbling block. So I think that's one of the issues that we have to iron out.
Were you one of those farmers that lost their...
I was not, no.
You were not? Okay. Dr. Tara?
I would say one of the things that I have noticed a lot more is the environmental concerns. So throughout the state, there's a lot more concerns in terms of how the dairy farmers and processors as well are considering the environment. I mean, we've always been really good stewards of our land and our animals, but it's something that has really taken off. And I think another piece is the technology. So we've got a lot of really neat technology out there, but we need to learn how to harness it a little bit better and tell our story better.
When you say environmental, is that largely the debate over CAFOs?
I think CAFOs is part of it, but I think also just learning how to better use manure. I mean, I think we all read a lot and look at what's out there. There's, you know, everything from spreading it on your own land to making sure you're doing a good job that way. I just read an article about baling manure. So, I mean, people are trying to do interesting things. We need to make sure that we're considering all angles when it comes to water runoff and handling manure, but also antibiotics, pesticides, the whole gamut, I think.
And Andrea?
Yeah, I mean, sort of to echo Dave a little bit with our consumer markets, and also kind of looking too at some of the consumer preferences. We're seeing a lot of changes. Our consumers really want to know where their food's coming from, and that's affecting how we operate on the farm level. You know, in addition to that, being a younger dairy farmer, we're seeing some struggles of, you know, potentially a first generation farmer wanting to start up in this business. It's been a struggle, but I think now that With the issues that Dave had mentioned with not being able to find a home for your milk market, that puts another added stress on a young farmer to really be able to get in this industry and hopefully excel. But that's definitely an added pressure. We've always had kind of the added pressure of, you know, where might you find a farm that you could buy into or potentially find a retiring farmer or different opportunities such as grazing or things of that nature. But I think that as a young farmer, I know of, you know, a few first-generation farmers that are unfortunately struggling right now to continue on.
Dr. Mark, given your expertise, what's the number one reason that the price per hundredweight is down 36% in 4 years?
Well,
number one, two, or three?
I'd go back just a little bit to indicate that 2014 was a great year, and it was an unusually good year for milk prices and dairy farmers. When we have that kind of thing, that's a market sending signals that says we want more of your product. And farms heard that, they read that, they decided we'll make more milk. And when collectively over the country 40,000 dairy producers make that same decision, sometimes we overshoot the marketplace. And we did. And there have been other things as well. We've currently got some trade issues that are causing problems and pushback, concerns about whether we have products for some or customers for some of the products that are being made now. So they're just a host of things, but the real problem has been not so much that the prices are low and where they are, but it's been the persistence of how low these have been. I think that most farms kind of prepare themselves for 1 or 2 years of these downturn in prices, but when it gets to be 4 years, the cash has been bled, and many farms are starting to dig into equity now for continuation of their business.
Well, that was one of my questions. Do dairy producers like yourselves, when the price is 24 per hundredweight, do you set aside money for the potential 3-4 years later when it's 15? You guys take a huge risk. Given the cyclical nature of the business, do you set aside some money for the less than productive times?
I don't know if we set aside enough money maybe at this point, but we do use risk management tools in our dairy operation, whether it's with the federal government and MPP, and that was one of the things that did not work in the 2014 Farm Bill. We thought we had something that would let the farmer have an option and work with that, and it just didn't seem to just pencil out as well as we had figured it on a dairy basis. So we do use a marketing agency to look at risk management, and we use that as something that will help us buffet maybe the spikes, the ups and the downs. But as Mark said, you know, it's been a long time. It's been 3 years that we've had distinctly low prices. And we should be coming out of that, and now there's some headwinds that are coming into play like trade and stuff.
Andrea?
Yeah, I mean,
2014 versus 2018?
Right, I certainly agree with the comments Dave had made. We also use margin protection also when contracting our milk and in those areas. Some things that we did too, in addition to that, where we looked at other kind of avenues on our farm to help offset some of the milk pricing, where we kind of look more towards raising beef, kind of to have supplemental income to help guide us through some of the lower market turns in milk price.
One of the questions that I have for you producers, what is the production cost? You're getting $15 per hundredweight. How far under production cost is that?
You know, that varies. USDA has got a huge number, like $21 per hundredweight. I think it's more in that $16 to $18, and that depends on what other avenues that your farm is taking up, like beef, or maybe you've got some more grain farm that you work with, so it may be some other income that's involved in the farm. So that's still a little bit below cost of production, but we were looking at futures that might get there, that would bring that cost up to where it would be manageable. Mm-hmm. But that's where about I think it is, at least on our farm. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Terry, you work with young farmers at the Pioneer Farm, don't you?
Yeah.
Yep. What advice or counsel do you give them when milk is $15 per hundredweight?
We talk about entrepreneurship. You know, we talk about thinking outside the box and thinking about not only ways to, you know, do a better job of slimming down what they're paying for things versus, you know, what they're you know, their purchases that they're making, how can they make wiser decisions with what they currently have, but then also how can they diversify? So taking a look at using genomics when they're making breeding decisions so that they can decide which animals that they're going to keep at a younger age, so they're not raising their heifers through to breeding when maybe they're not the best choices, or breeding to beef, and so having some of those options as well. And then we also, you know, we look at maybe helping them consider making their own product, especially if they want to bring multiple kids back to the farm. Mm-hmm. That's really tough to do. To be able to bring one person back to the farm, that's maybe doable, but when multiple kids, and we see that a lot, it's a legacy kind of a thing at Platteville where a lot of people want to go back to their home farm, and then how do they do that? Whether it's looking at raising beef, raising additional crops, or trying to cut costs where they can.
Well, one, I was fascinated by your bio. You work a lot with sheep and goat milk production. Is that up in Wisconsin, and is that a potential niche, a growing part of the Wisconsin's dairy?
So it's an interesting part, for sure.
It fascinated me on your website.
It's really interesting. We have the most dairy goats in Wisconsin, especially in the southwest part of Wisconsin, than anywhere else in the United States, for certain. And we, in Wisconsin, do a really good job of bringing in experts from all over the world to try to help us make good decisions when we're going into some of these unique areas. A lot of them are trying to get into their own unique markets in terms of making their own cheese or making yogurt or things like that. But there's a lot of struggles there. It's not like it used to be, unfortunately, in the UW system or in any system, any research universities, there's very little research being done at the level that we used to be able to do research, especially for cows. And their market is different, and where they're finding their funding and things like that. So there's a lot of things that we don't know, and we're trying to do research even at the undergraduate level, like at Platteville and at River Falls, to be able to say, okay, how do we do this? What are the best practices so that every farmer that tries to get into goats or that tries to get into sheep has a little bit more education rather than just trial by fire or trial and error?
Dr. Mark, we've lost 500 dairy farms last year, but do I have this right that average production per cow is slightly increasing because of technology? Is there a contradiction? Help me understand that.
Now, our productivity, the increases in milk production per cow, have been one of the most stable, incredible long-term trends of any agricultural product that you can see. I mean, corn yields go up generally over time, but, you know, it's high one year, a little bit lower the next. It's kind of a zigzag. With milk production, it's just almost straight line, and it's about 280 pounds of milk per cow per year. So that trend means that if we don't grow consumption, either through domestic needs here or export needs, we don't need as many cows. And we had been culling cows for a long period of time, but when export markets provided some new opportunities, we had a chance to grow the herd a little bit more too.
Are Americans drinking less milk?
Drinking, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, but there's another part to that, but...
Well, I think, but we're consuming more milk equivalent per capita than we have in a good many years. So some of this is category shifting. I mean, I can't remember the last time I woke up and had a bowl of cold cereal with milk on it for breakfast. But I usually grab a cup of yogurt. So, and I didn't used to do that. So I'm still consuming dairy products, but it's different than it was before.
Anybody else on the shifts that you've seen as long as you've been in the dairy industry, Dave?
And what we've seen is the fluid consumption is gradually decreasing, but the cheese consumption is increasing, so which has really made Wisconsin a benefit for that because of the cheesemakers that they have. Now, we're not anywhere near France. France is probably close to 45, I think, pounds per person, and we're around 37 or 38. So, I mean, there's still room to grow that, and I think the niche marketing and the niche cheese making that's out there will benefit for the appetite of other people.
Do you three, when you're asked by young farmers whether they should get into dairy production, Do you say, hang on, because it won't be 15 per hundredweight forever? Or do you offer them maybe some other career advice? Tara?
That's a good question. Most of the students that we see that are coming into it have fallen in love with the dairy cow or goat. I have a lot of students who are coming in and they have just a love for their animal. And we have more and more people who they encounter the animal the first time. At Platteville, we have a lot of students who come in with very little experience on the farm. We try to give them a lot of experience with Pioneer Farm, and they get out there and they see where the passion is. You know, the folks that we have that work in the industry are passionate about their animals. And then they want to do it. They do it because they love the people that they encounter and the animals and the lifestyle, not necessarily worrying about the price, because especially the young people, I think, have a stick-to-itiveness and a passion, entrepreneurial spirit that they're going to figure out a way to make it work. We have some people who come in and they're coming back to school or coming into school because mom and dad decided that they couldn't. For whatever reason, they lost their market or whatnot, and they have to find a different path in the industry. So maybe they go out and they work as a nutritionist, or they breed cows or something like that. Or they work in cheese production and they're trying to figure out how to grow that market, or work in marketing. So there's a lot of different avenues. I mean, the dairy industry, like you mentioned, is huge. So it's not just about the folks that are on the farm. But I don't see a decline in interest. I just see a shift in where they're going to be going depending on where they're starting from.
You know, Dave and Andrea, you've got legacy farms. Do you think that legacy will continue, Andrea?
Yeah, I certainly hope so. And kind of as Tara was mentioning, I mean, I didn't take the direct path right back to my family farm. I did work in the industry for over 10 years before being able to find that fit on my family farm due to, you know, other challenges in pricing and the size of our herd to be able to support me as a full-time employee or full-time member of the farm, I guess, to be able to be there. But you know, I think, I certainly hope our farm continues on. We do have the fourth generation coming through my brother's family, and, we are setting ourselves up to hopefully continue through opportunities of diversifying ourselves. I certainly want to add on to what Tara had said that, you know, I know a lot of young people that have taken the opportunity to further develop other skills where they can bring those back to their dairy operation, and in terms of like making cheese or bottling milk or things of that. And we've seen a lot of those, I think, pop up on family farms here in the last 10 years, or making ice cream, things like that. And I think that, you know, that excites me because, like, that gets my wheels turning too. Like, that's something that, you know, I'm still young enough. Like, hey, if something else happens, we got an opportunity where we could grow somewhere else. And both my brother and I have college degrees, and, you know, we could harness that and move forward in a different direction.
How many head is your farm milking?
We milk 350.
350.
And run about 700 acres.
Will yours be a legacy? Will the legacy continue, Dave?
There's a fourth generation that's coming up. It's I'm in a partnership, so his son and a nephew would like to come into the farming operation. And matter of fact, the last couple of days they were working with a milk manufacturing company in visiting some robot farms. Now, whether we go that route, I'm not sure, but there's always new technology coming in board. And even for me, I've been working in the operation for, you know, close to 40 years. And you know, with genomics that Tara mentioned, we use that on our farm, so we're using that technology. And it's just something that just kind of keeps on tumbling down at you, and if you accept it and look at it, I think you're going to be you'll be able to keep that operation moving. And because if you don't, other farmers will.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Mark, let's talk about the relationship between milk production and cheese. Is the cheese industry in Wisconsin not as experiencing not as much headwinds, to use that earlier term, as the milk producers, the dairy farms, or is that an unfair comparison?
Oh, you know, it's a little, I know it's all in the dairy industry, but it's a little like comparing apples to oranges.
Thank you.
Producing milk is, without a question, a commodity business, meaning that Dave would have a hard time distinguishing his milk from Andrea's. And it means that the way to success on a dairy farm is really by finding the opportunities to be a lower cost producer than everybody else. And Dave's indicated, and I know Andrew would be doing the same thing, looking at technologies, evaluating them. Do they fit on my farm? Do they shave my cost? Can I do something better with it? For many of our plants, it's a little bit different. They're producing products that hopefully are not just commodities, but are somewhat distinguishable. So a cheese from a Sartori is different from, you know, a cheese from a Grande operation or some of the other plants that we have in the state. And, you know, they have an opportunity to think about who is my customer and what do they want. I can tailor it a little bit more to them. So it's a bit different.
Okay. Talk to us, about the task force process. Do you envision a start when, and how are you defining the charge of the task force, and when do you think you might, the group might make some recommendations, the process here?
Well, first of all, you know, the task force has really barely gotten started.
Right.
And we're in the process of trying to select committee members right now, this week, as we speak. And when that's done, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I know exactly what the charge of that task, I know the big picture, the charge of the task force, but the task force itself needs to think about and come up with what are the issues that are important to us. I mean, I couldn't prescribe all of the issues that the industry faces. We want to listen and hear from people at the milk production level, at the environmental level, at the plant level, and on up through the marketing chain. And by the way, there are plenty of people before the farm and between the farm and the plant that are important here. They will be represented on the task force. So the task force will do that. It will take some time. We're going to give the task force enough time to not only identify the issues and problems, but also to think about possible solutions. And we expect it will take a good year before the task force is finished.
This is a chance for you to listen. I mean, you said one of the tasks
is
listening.
Yeah.
If you were speaking to the task force, the number one issue you think they should, task force should look into, Dave, and then Tara, and then Andrea?
I guess I go back to the cheesemakers and the dairy producers, the loyalty and maybe the workmanship between those two groups.
Okay.
You know, a dairy cow is a wonderful cow, and you can feed her correctly to change her milk basis and components and stuff like that. So I think that would be an issue that I would try and help the task force look at.
Tara, this is your chance. He's the chair. He's the chair.
Woo-hoo. Wow, that's a tough one. You know, I take a look at all sorts of, you know, angles. There's the global angle, figuring out how we can do more exporting and that sort of thing. But honestly, I think I would echo what Dave said, because making sure that we're telling the story, that each individual farm is individual. I mean, everybody's got such a unique story. Even the larger farms, which people want to say they're factory farms, they're not. They have people who care about those animals and care about the milk that they're producing. And I think that making that distinction and helping, you know, the producer who's really helping the cheesemaker, helping them tell that story, I think is going to be important.
Andrea, your thoughts?
I think it's a good opportunity to start to have those conversations. And what else can we do with milk besides, you know, a non-food product? Or is there a way we can use fluid milk, you know, in that type of process? I mean, we look at corn. We've had the opportunity to develop ethanol products. So, I mean, I'm wondering if, you know, I mean, somebody's got to be smarter and more creative than me to potentially find another avenue for fluid milk in a non-form or a non-food form.
Do you see part of the charge of the task force to deal with the workforce issue? Because the backdrop of that is the national immigration debate. Is that part of the charge? Do you see it?
Well, I think that it almost has to be. I think if you'd ask you were talking about robotics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You don't do that just because it's cool to watch a piece of equipment do something. You would do that because it's a significant labor usage on a dairy farm. And it's an expensive piece of equipment you're looking
Correct.
At. So labor is a big issue.
Do you have trouble finding workers on both your farms, Andrea?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
Dave?
Yeah, we do. And, you know, to echo some of Dave's comments about robotics, I mean, we are also, you know, having those conversations now because of the way things are looking. You know, there's a potential that we will need to really investigate those and make those happen.
But the capital costs of robotic farming, extremely high.
Right. As well as most things in a dairy industry, yeah. Capital costs are always high to buy that new stuff. But, you know, 3-4 years ago when our unemployment was a little higher, it was easier to bring people into the farm and they were looking for jobs. Now with the economy steamrolling, those people are looking elsewhere for different jobs because dairy farming is not an easy thing. It's a little bit repetitive. You're out in the elements a little bit. You have to work with a 1,600-pound animal that sometimes doesn't really cooperate once in a while.
Overview. Where does Wisconsin milk go? What percentage of it stays in Wisconsin? What percentage of it is exported? Is that a question for you, Dr. Mark?
Well, I can take a shot at it. I mean, for one thing, we don't actually know with high precision how much of the milk stays here, but probably 90% or more of it does stay here.
90%.
There's nothing that prohibits trucks from moving across state borders, and we don't really track all of that all the time. But we have a lot of manufacturing plants here with cheese, primarily. We have a lot of milk here, and it's going to find its way into a plant that's close by as quickly and easily as it can because it's expensive to move milk down the road any long distance.
Who's our biggest competitor? Is it California? I mean, we're number one in cheese, but they're number one in milk production?
In milk production, they're number one, but in Wisconsin, we're the number one cheese-making state in the union. And as Mark says, our milk, it remains here and it gets manufactured here, but then it goes somewhere else. I mean, you can't find it sometimes in Florida or in Texas, and people are looking for it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Wisconsin cheese has a brand for itself, and we just need to help expand that brand and get it out there.
Okay. Front pages of the New York Times this week talked about potential tariffs on dairy industry in America. Is that a big concern, or you just said about 90% of our milk stays in Wisconsin? The tariffs, major concern for some of you producers?
I'll look at it as one of those headwinds that we, as a producer, we're not going to be able to change that at any time, but it's going to affect our price to a certain extent at this point in time.
Drive it down even more?
It may, and we've seen the milk prices going down the last week or so, 10 days, but now yesterday they elevated themselves back up again, not a portion of what they went down. So we'll see that. Now, will the tariff issues and the trade issues, if they come to agreements, Mexico could come back and buy more milk from us or milk products from us. So I think in the long run, it's going to be very advantageous to get those things worked out. It's just the fact of getting through that process.
Andrea, how do you see the whole tariff discussion, please?
Yeah, I mean, very, very similar to Dave. You know, I think that making sure we're maintaining those good relationships and opening those because, you know, I mean, Canada, Mexico, I mean, we do export a fair, you know, probably over 50% of Wisconsin egg goes to those two countries. And I think maintaining those good relationships and having the ability to maintain, you know, our businesses and potentially grow those is very important to the dairy industry as a whole. Absolutely.
Tara, when you meet with young potential farmers and they stay in touch with the news, when they ask about tariffs, how do you answer?
Well, you know, I mean, we talk about making sure that they're keeping their voice heard, that regardless of what they're going into, what part of the industry that they're going into, a lot of our dairy science majors are also ag business majors because they understand that it's a business also. As much as they might not want to deal with the human interaction or they might not want to deal with, you know, the business and the tariffs and things like that, to keep talking about what's important to them, make sure that their voice is heard. And sometimes that's becoming, you know, political, for lack of a better word, at the right. local level right. and making sure that they're going to the places or having representation and making sure that their voice is heard because sometimes they feel like it's out of their control. But in the end, it's not because, you know, if they speak and they get other people talking and, you know, we bring speakers onto campus that can help them figure out where is their place in all of this and what can they do to make a difference. We try to take them to other countries so that they can understand that the dairy industry is pretty similar all over the world. You know, in China and in Romania and in even in Africa, there's similar things that we're dealing with. And so just kind of having that more global perspective helps. But just, you know, keeping on top of it and talking about what's important to them.
Potential tariffs, Mark, will that be a small or a significant part of the task force agenda, do you think?
Well, we can talk about it, and we probably will, but you know, I think that one thing that the task force needs to be sure that they try to do is to identify not just the things that are a problem or an irritant, but particularly the items where we can actually do something about it and work on the issue. Trade negotiations at this point in time right now is probably bigger than what the state can do.
Yes.
We'll do what we can for sure. And frankly, I'm a little bit more concerned than I've heard, you know, people talking about here, because the longer we're standing on the sidelines and looking like a bad guy, the European Union and other countries are busily negotiating trade pacts with countries that we have been involved with for trade, and they've also been negotiating in many of these countries geographic indicators for their products. That's a problem for us, because when we've been used to making a Parmesan cheese and selling that to another country, this may mean that we can't do that and call it Parmesan cheese. Same product, can't use the name. That's a problem long-term, not short-term.
A quick follow-up. Do you think then that some of these international factors will more influence the future of Wisconsin's dairy industry than domestic policies?
Oh, I think that international opportunities are big and available for us. We were a bit player in world markets until maybe 15 years ago. And at that point in time, we became competitive with these world prices. And it's allowed us to have the growth that we've been able to have in that time period. We also look at the rest of the world and see the evolving nature of population, where families are young, as well as where there's population growth and growth in their wealth and economies. They can purchase dairy products now that they couldn't before. And it's estimated that the world will need as much as 43% more trade over the next 15 or 20 years.
43% more trade.
Mm-hmm, to satisfy those needs. We'd like to be a part of that.
Yep. There was a phrase in the New York Times story on Wisconsin's dairy industry, or the nation's dairy industry, that really intrigued me. So I'm going to ask you two dairy producers. Andrea and Dave, would you ever dump milk? Dave.
Probably not. I would get something for that milk, so I would probably make sure that it goes to the processor. Whether he chooses to do that, I guess it is his prerogative, and it'll probably go on my pay scale that I will not get as much money for that milk, but I probably won't do that.
Andrea?
No.
Okay. We're almost out of time, but I have just a few more questions.
Okay.
Is there any good news for the dairy industry? Come on, we've been talking about these major concerns, but somebody offer a nugget of good news for the dairy industry.
I think there's always people who are curious. I think there's more people than ever that are coming to, you know, it's June Dairy Month, and there's more breakfasts on the farm. There's more people coming to breakfast on the farm. There's people who want to, they understand that it's an important industry, and they want to understand it so that they can promote it and they can, you know, try more things. We have inner city kids who come to Platteville, and we have them try different cheeses. They've never tried cheese in some cases at all.
Okay.
And so I think that there's a lot of curiosity and a lot of interest, and especially at the local level, I think there's some excitement there.
I'd say we're in a world market. And 18% of our dairy products in the last couple months have gone overseas. So that is a plus. And as Mark talked about...
18%, Dave?
18%. And 43% more than what's going to need in the next 15 years. So that middle class is growing. I think dairy products is going to be something that they'll want. We just have to figure out what they want and produce the things that they need. I saw a little clip about cheese sticks being flavored and kids having that with their fruits. as a snack. So if somebody is being entrepreneurship and working through those kind of things that they need to do.
Okay. Any other good news before my last question? No? Here's my.
I think that part of the good news is just that we have the agronomic resources in this region of the country with fertile soils, with a cooler climate. Sometimes that's miserable in the winter, but but honestly, cows like it. And it's one of the reasons that we're producing as much milk as we do. It's also part of our current problem that the industry evolves a little bit more slowly. So we got a lot of milk up here. We don't have all the processing capacity we need.
Okay, final question is this. Crystal ball. You're experts and producers. Your worst scenario for 2 to 5 years and your most hopeful scenario 2 to 5 years. Dave, you want to start?
Worst scenario. Weather changes. We could see some things in the next 2 to 5 years. We've always worked with a weather market. Dairy cows are influenced by that and what feed we have to purchase. We usually grow all of our feed for the dairy cows, and we don't have to purchase as much. That could be something that would be not beneficial. Okay. I talked about exports, and I really think that that is going to be a plus for us in the next 2 to 5 years.
Thank you. Tara, best and worst?
I would say worst scenario is the continuing trend of smaller farms getting out of the industry. And those farms then becoming something that aren't agricultural anymore. That could be really potentially harmful. On the flip side, if folks are diversifying more, it allows us to keep the dairy industry going, but it allows us to explore some other parts of agriculture. And the more we get partnerships and meet folks from other countries and stay open to what's out there, I think that we have the capacity to grow in Wisconsin.
Thank you very much. Andrea?
I think, you know, the influence of our consumer and the changing view of what consumers think we should be doing and how that can affect what we're doing on the farm level on our day-to-day basis. And I think that that's, you know, a little bit scary and it scares some of us. But I think, you know, best case scenario is we continue to have these markets, open up new markets, new opportunities for farmers to keep going and to bring that next generation in or that niche market into their farm. And I think those are exciting opportunities, I would feel.
Thank you. Dr. Mark?
Well, I think there are lots of hopeful things that we can look forward to. Maybe one of the short-term ones might be that on June 5th we get a tweet or two that just says, you know, just kidding, we've solved all our trade issues.
That'd be great.
Yeah, that would be really nice. You know, worst case scenario, we continue to face pressures with intensive dairying operations and the clash with not only people living in the area, but with the changing consumer base that, you know, we don't evolve fast enough to meet their needs. But I think we can do that.
Okay. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Dairy Month, $43 billion economic impact, 42,000 people in Wisconsin work in this industry. So that's why I want to thank experts Mark, Andrea, Tara, and Dave for coming in. And I think I better need a yogurt for lunch. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.